presents a special edition of Straight Talk Africa Town Hall on Ebola. Hello, welcome to a special edition of Straight Talk Africa. I am Shaka Salee. Today, the Voice of America brings you a town hall on Ebola with the theme, Knowledge is Life. We are joined by a distinguished panel of experts, including two people who survived Ebola. They have gathered here in our Washington studios because they believe knowledge or information is the most powerful weapon against Ebola, which has killed over 5,000 on the continent. We also have a live audience of African scholars, journalists, and VIP guests who will participate in this very important discussion. Now I want to introduce our social media reporter, Mariama Diallo, who is reviewing your questions and comments on our different platforms. Mariama?
Well, indeed, Shaka, hello to you and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. Mariama Diallo here, your social media reporter. We've received tremendous feedback from so many people with lots of questions and comments about Ebola for our town hall panelists. We've gathered them through emails and Facebook comments, and now our newest social media platform, Twitter, will be tweeting live today, giving people another chance to participate in this special programming on Ebola. So follow us at VOA Shaka, and don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Ebola. We'll also talk to and hear from our audience here, and we'll be ready to take questions and comments live in the studio. So lots of things to talk about today, and looking forward to engaging everyone on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
On a programming note, since this is an in-studio town hall with a live audience, we apologize that we will not be taking your telephone calls. Now, joining us here in our Washington studios are four distinguished guests. Bokari K. Stevens, the Sierra Leonean ambassador to the United States, one of the three nations heavily affected by the Ebola outbreak. The situation is most critical in Sierra Leone, where cases are still increasing with an estimated total of over 5,300 reported cases. Dr. Malonga Miyatudla, a public health specialist who knows Ebola very well. In 1976, Dr. Miyatudla was part of an international team that first identified the virus in Yambuku, Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo. Dr. Rick Sankra, a U.S. medical missionary in Liberia for serving in Mission or SIM, an international Christian mission organization. Dr. Sankra was the third U.S. Ebola patient and was the first to be treated at the Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. And Ashok Mukupo, a freelance photojournalist who contracted Ebola while working in Liberia for NBC News. He's the fifth American to be diagnosed with the virus and the second Ebola patient to be treated in Omaha. Welcome to you all. Nancy Lindberg, Assistant Administrator for the Bureau for Democracy, Conflict and Humanitarian Assistance for the U.S. Agency for International Development, was scheduled to appear, but she was called to testify on Capitol Hill. Before we begin our discussion, I am joined by the man with the vision behind today's town hall on Ebola and its importance to our global audience, David Enso, the director of the Voice of America. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Shaka. And I'd like to echo your thanks to our distinguished panel here today for joining us in the studio for this important conversation. It's an honor to have you all here. Let me just say a couple of words about VOA's role. Back since March 22nd, when it first became known that an outbreak in Guinea was not Marburg hemorrhagic fever, but in fact Ebola, VOA has been reporting on this story, and I can tell you now we will stay with it for as long as necessary, even if other major media move on to other stories. So far, VOA has filed over 1,000 stories on the disease and produced dozens of programs featuring health and policy experts to discuss both how to stay safe and what response efforts there are. There's so many stories that we had the chance to tell of the courage of health workers of Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia. This tragedy is at least bringing out some of the best in human nature. VOA has a special website, www.ebola.voanews.com, which is providing basic facts about the disease and links to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization information as well. And very soon, VOA will launch a new 24/7 programming stream on FM stations in Monrovia, Liberia, and Freetown, Sierra Leone. These will feature special 10-minute Ebola updates 5 times a day. We've also been airing special public service announcements from VOA's Africa division, as well as from the CDC here in the United States, and from UNICEF. These have included words from people like President Obama, former President Jimmy Carter, and Liberian President Ellen Jones Sirleaf. We have some new public service announcements ready, and I understand, Shaka, you may be previewing a few of them on the show today. And while we're usually friendly competitors with the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, this outbreak is too serious for both of us to be competing. So my colleague at the BBC and I have agreed to run each other's news reports and public service announcements so that we can get the maximum exposure of this important information. So I can assure you this is a rare thing. We normally like to compete. But on something like this, given the seriousness of it, our British colleagues and we are committed to trying to help end this scourge together. So finally, on behalf of all of us, before I turn it back to you, Shaka, all of us at Voice of America, I would just like to express our profound condolences to any of those watching this broadcast who may have lost family members, friends, or colleagues to Ebola. We grieve with you. Shaka?
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you, David, indeed. And now let's start. Let me come to you immediately, the Sierra Leonean ambassador himself. First of all, I have to say I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time, by the way, on Straight Talk Africa. You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Give us a sense of the mood on the ground in Freetown or in Sierra Leone.
The mood on the ground, one will characterize as being very somber, but very serious. One of the most important challenges that we are facing is sensitizing our population for them to move away from established practices, from long customary practices. And that is why, at the moment, the president has been touring almost all the districts in Sierra Leone, trying to get our people to understand that for us to be able to defeat Ebola, we must have to depart from established customs and practices.
And how are they responding?
It is hard for me to say at the moment because the response will depend upon the results that we are getting. The results so far in some areas is going down, in some areas is coming up. But especially in the epicenters where the Ebola started, we are very happy to see that there has been a constant reduction in new rates. So it's working in some areas and not working in some areas. And the president has been very, very hard in some of these areas, especially in his own district, where he even suspended one of the sub-chiefs for failing to comply with the basic bylaws that have been set up. What our people did in some of these areas, especially in the successful areas, where the chiefs themselves initiated bylaws by which they expected everybody in their community to comply. In some areas, people have complied. In other areas, people have not complied. And that is why we have this exponential increase.
Last time we hosted the Sierra Leonean First Lady, she talked about the issue of hysteria. How has that been solved so far? Are people still afraid? Do they still, for example, feel like, look, this is not a disease, this is probably juju?
That concept is still pervasive. I wouldn't say it's all pervasive, but it's still pervasive, it's still around. And it all boils down to the hard concept people have about their culture. But there's a lot of sensitization going up. There's a lot of education going on. And like I said, this kind of concept is not prevalent all over. It's prevalent in certain areas of the community. And this is where we are now putting a lot of attention to be able to convert these people from these old practices, for them to know that it's time for a change and that we need to change.
Thank you very much, sir. Dr. Malonga, you are obviously not someone new in this business. You are an old hand. You have actually been at this since 1976. What makes the ongoing outbreak different from all previous outbreaks, beginning with that one in 1976, and why?
Thank you, my brother Shaka. This West Africa outbreak is unique. It's unique by its magnitude, by its duration. But it has to be understood that this outbreak is the 26th outbreak. So that means Africa, we have had, before this outbreak, we have had 25 outbreaks. And none of those 25 outbreaks lasted more than 3 months. None. So this is what I'm saying, this is a unique outbreak.
Are you telling me that there have been no lessons learned from the previous outbreaks? Or is this, in fact, a particularly unique strain of the virus?
This is what we thought. But unfortunately, it's not a new strain. Ebola has stayed the same, almost the same, from 1976, where we have the Ebola, when we identify Ebola in the northern part of Congo, Zaire. And Ebola, the virus, has not mutated that much. It has remained the same, although we have five types, but Ebola is fundamentally the same. So what has changed, I think, is our response to the virus. That's the only thing that has changed. We had outbreaks in DR Congo. We had outbreak in Uganda. We had outbreak in southern Sudan. We had outbreak in Congo-Brazzaville, Gabon. We have had, even in DRC, we have had 8 outbreaks. And I repeat, none of them has lasted more than 3 months.
What about the
And issue? Between 1976 till December 2013, Ebola has killed 1,326 people in almost 40 years. Ebola has killed less than 2,000 people. So again, this is really unique.
So what is it that in your particular case with your group you were able to do, and this time around it's not being done in the western part of the African continent?
The analogy I like is the analogy of fire in California. We know that we have fire in California every summer. But you don't wait until a whole city is burned before sending your firefighters. You need swift response. And in all the 25 outbreaks before that, we had speedy response. But this time, unfortunately, when it started in Guinea, we waited, we spent time, we waited more than 100 days before acknowledging that we have a problem. It's like in California, you wait until you see the whole city burned before sending the first firefighters.
Very interesting. Let me come to you, of course, Dr. Rick Sacra. I hope I'm not murdering your last name, am I?
Sacra.
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 Thank you.
I stand corrected. How does it feel like to be an Ebola survivor, really?
It's a very humbling experience for me as a physician. I'm supposed to be the one who knows all the procedures to prevent Ebola. And then I came down with it myself. So I'd say it's a very humbling experience. I'm very grateful to have survived. I am not any better than those who have passed away from this disease. And so I'm very grateful for my survival.
What do you think was there in your particular case, something particularly unique or special about your particular situation that makes it different from those other thousands who have suffered from the disease?
I think I got tested and treated quite early. Right away, the moment I had a fever, I contacted my boss at ELWA, Dr. Brown, and told him about it, and we arranged to have a test done at the right time. When my test was positive, I went straight into the treatment unit. And now, of course, in my case, I was evacuated to the U.S. With the help of the State Department and others. And I received, care at a level that's unfortunately not available in Liberia where I was serving. Our prayer and our effort is to bring better care everywhere we can, however, whatever is provided in order to do that. So there's a lot of differences. I think to be able to have lab tests during care, most of the Ebola treatment units are not able to monitor labs during treatment, to be able to receive some other medications. Those are differences. These are things that are coming, though. I'm hearing that clinical trials are getting ready. They're getting ready to start some trials of special medications and things in West Africa now, which is wonderful, which is where we need to be heading.
Rick, you are obviously a lucky graduate of the Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha, correct?
Right.
What do you think about the Sierra Leonean Dr. Martin Salia, who died Monday, who basically walked through your footsteps, really, but just couldn't make it?
I think that he, was much further into the disease process when he arrived in Nebraska. And it's sobering because it makes me realize that if I had been delayed perhaps even a few days, maybe I would not have survived myself. But it really emphasizes the importance of early treatment and early intervention.
And what about the case of the first, in fact, patient to die on American soil, and that was Liberian Thomas Duncan in Dallas? Was it a case of perhaps negligence? What was it?
Well, there were certainly delays. I think everyone has acknowledged that there were delays in the diagnosis and in getting him into treatment. So again, I think early recognition, early treatment is really critical.
Now, of course, this brings me to the man himself, the journalist. How does it feel to be alive today?
Lucky and very fortunate. I think there are so many people who've struggled with this disease and gone through what I went through and have not been as fortunate as I am. So, life is full of things that you might wish were a little bit better, but I'm alive and I'm fortunate, and every day is a blessing. And I'm very grateful for everybody who made that possible.
Ashok, you're a very unique individual. You have in the past said, among other things, that you had seen some bad things and told friends how unpredictable and fraught with danger life can be. Mm-hmm. Did you say that?
I did.
You also added that I hope that humanity can figure out how we can take care of each other and our world. Simple, soft aspirations for all my brothers and sisters on this earth who suffer the elements and the cold. May we all be free, loved, and tended to. These are very, very uniquely strong observations. Ashok?
It's really transporting me back to a kind of moment of reflection and sorrow that I was having at the time that I wrote that. It's kind of amazing to be in a place where somebody's reading that out loud at a TV studio. I never thought that that would happen. But I think for all the journalists and everybody who was in Liberia and Sierra Leone and Guinea who saw the things that were happening at that period of time in the outbreak, it was just weighed on our hearts so much. I mean, to see people looking for medical care who needed immediate help and they couldn't get it, it just shocks you. When we look at all the privilege and all the infrastructure that we have in the West to take care of each other, and to see people who needed medical care more than anybody else and couldn't even get a bed to lay in, I think it would shock anybody's conscience. And to me, it feels like that's not okay. We have to do a better job.
Of course, as you say, you come from a life of privilege. You didn't have to be in Liberia. What makes you tick? What inspired you, really, or made you choose to live that kind of life?
I think, you know, everybody gets to choose what they care about in life and what's important to them. And for me, I think people who have privilege, people who have opportunity, it's a good thing to give back if you can. And you have to use your intelligence, so it's not just wanting to do good, but trying to see what you can actually accomplish to help people who are doing hard work. And I don't know. I just feel like it's a beautiful world, but we can make it better.
Is that something that you learned from your religion, Buddhism? What is it?
Yeah, I think there are so many inspirational people in this world. You know, I was raised as a Buddhist, so for me, I do have some value of compassion and responsibility in those things, but also I've been inspired by leaders and teachers and artists who have cared about the world around them, and, you know, hopefully I can walk in their footsteps a little bit.
Well, I'm afraid time is not our best ally. Before we pause for a short break, Webcam SDA Twitter page, we would like to remind you again that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. We are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's Knowledge is Life Ebola Town Hall with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Ebola. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We're right back with you, so please don't go away.
Ebola is not a curse or spiritual infection. It is a deadly disease, a fever spread by contact with the body fluids of infected people. I am Dr. Kande Greaves. Its symptoms start with a fever, fatigue, and muscle pain. Within a few days, vomiting and diarrhea sets in, and victims lose about 4 liters of body fluid each day. Ebola is highly infectious. If you experience any of these symptoms, seek medical help immediately. You must wash your hands regularly. Do not eat or handle bushmeat. Stay away from people suffering from Ebola. And do not handle the bodies of Ebola victims. If you have had contact with someone who has Ebola, you need to have your temperature monitored daily for any change. Early diagnosis and treatment is critical to your survival. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa's Town Hall on Ebola. Representative Karen Bass from the U.S. state of California has been on the forefront of U.S. response to the Ebola crisis. As the ranking member of the House Subcommittee on Africa, she's been pushing her congressional colleagues to approve more money and resources for West Africa. Last week, she spoke with our own Paul Sisco.
The president has requested $6 billion in additional aid, and I'm hoping that we can get to that very quickly so that those dollars can be on the street in West Africa and that we can do everything possible to make sure that we are able to arrest the epidemic. It raised the issue of countries that have very weak health infrastructures. And what I am hoping is that in this tragedy, that there is a bit of an opportunity for the world now to pay attention, that it is in everyone's interest around the globe that there be adequate health structures. You know, we've been very clear when it comes to electricity, when it comes to water, when it comes to conservation, and I think we were missing when it came to health. We are not going to let this problem really cause a collapse of the economies or the general governance system in these countries.
Well, it also tells me in a certain way, too, that this is one world.
I think that the Ebola problem has certainly demonstrated how small the planet is. And I just feel so sorry for the families that have been affected. And one problem, one part of the collateral damage from Ebola has been the number of orphans. And so just think of family members who have to watch their loved ones die and they can't even touch them. And in some instances have had to put them out of the house. So the impact that it's had on individual families, I can just not even imagine the toll it has taken on the psyche of the people that have been impacted.
Well, thanks to you and the Congress for doing what you can.
Thank you.
Representative Bass couldn't join us, but she wanted our audience to know that she's on your side. Today, we have the rare opportunity for our panel to interact with a live audience. Mariama, who has a question?
Well, I'm going to actually go to the audience, and if I see some hands up, I'm going to start right here on the second row. And if you won't mind basically giving us your name and also your affiliation and either ask a comment or ask a question or make a comment.
Okay. My name is Evelyn Lewis. I'm from Sierra Leone. I just came to the U.S. about 3 weeks ago, so I got my clearance now.
Are you sure?
Yes. I have a copy of it. I'll show it to you if you need to. But my question is going to be a comment, and basically a question or comment. We provide the call center software for Sierra Leone, and we donated that free, actually. I've been on the ground throughout the process. One key thing that I keep hearing all of you saying is delay swift. I keep hearing these words. It means that somehow we're not reacting quick enough or acting quick enough to get to the solutions. And I think that's been very clear in the way the calls come into the call center and how the calls get dispatched. And, you know, you look at that trend and you begin to see some patterns. And then you also begin to look at the time it takes to transport patients from the time you know that they have Ebola to the treatment centers, even overseas. What can we do using information technology to actually improve on the processes to actually help in getting to patients? And my second point is that we have two important areas that are really struggling. As a business person, I just had about $1 million of cancellations in Sierra Leone to my business. I'm a small business, you know, by at least some standard over there and here. There's a huge economic impact that is also boiling in these countries. Disease and poverty are best friends. It seems like we might very well be heading to an economic tragedy immediately Ebola is over. What are we doing to address those situations right now? And finally, school is out for a lot of kids, which is a really bad thing, and this is throughout the board. What are additional methodologies that we can use? I know we're trying to use radio now. What additional methodologies can we use to expedite that so that we can actually get kids back into school? Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Shaka, you heard those questions and comments, a lot of things to address.
Thank you very much. Who do you think is best suited really to address this logistical thing? Is it something that you can talk about, Mr. Ambassador?
The essential point to conjecture is that this was something nobody planned for. Our health system, our whole governmental structure never anticipated this kind of catastrophe. So what we are doing now is trying to manage the situation as it arises. I understand I have a lot of children there that I'm also responsible for schooling. And I think what the initiative that they have taken, whereby lessons are taken on radios and children are put in encampment, whereby lessons are delivered to the radios, is quite it's a drop in an ocean, but it's something that is working to some extent. And also the issue of technology, I mean, I don't have much on that. But on the economic front, I mean, it is important to mention that before Ebola, Sierra Leone was one of the 7 fastest growing economies in the world. We had everything in place. And therefore, with Ebola, almost everything has come at a standstill. Mm-hmm. And this is what we are appealing with. We've been meeting with the World Bank. We've been meeting with United States congressmen. We've been meeting with very important personalities. That our main concern is post-Ebola. What happens after Ebola? How are we going to resuscitate our economy? And I can say that the government is already aware of this and is working towards this with our development partners. We have a lot of goodwill from the Europeans, the Dutch. The Dutch have just gone in a big way, I think, the last couple of days. And also we are discussing that with members of the State Department, and these are things that we take very seriously.
Are you satisfied with the level of response so far?
As a diplomat, it's hard to be critical of somebody giving you... The international response in the beginning definitely had been very slow and very weak. Even now, the problem we are having is synchronizing international response with our own government national policies. I mean, we must understand that there is a sitting government, there is an administration, they are in charge of Sierra Leone. So there is a lot of NGOs going in with all the goodwill. We appreciate them, but we want them to synchronize whatever they are doing with our government so that we don't send mixed messages to the people.
I see. Mariama, other questions, I'm sure.
Yes, I think I was here in the front. I think I'm going to go to the back, and then we'll come back. And while I walk to...
Why not take a lady, at least in the context
the lady,
of democracy?
We can do that. Boy,
from
girl,
a guy,
boy, girl.
You go to a woman and,
so hopefully my brother here is going to forgive me. Of course, ladies first. I'm already forgiven. Thank you very much. I'm going to go right here, and I'll have you just... Same thing, your first, last name, and your affiliation, and a question or comment.
My name is Beta Simpson. I'm a Liberian living in the United States. I'm affiliated with Project Liberia Ebola. We're a group that has shipped over 20,000 pounds worth of medical supplies to Liberia. We're Liberians living in the diaspora that are concerned. My question is for the ambassador and also for Dr. Miat Tudila. I hope I pronounce your name. Best practices. We read in the press that Ebola is now waning in Liberia, and we're hoping that that trend continues. But we also hear that things are ramping up in Sierra Leone. So my question is, are we sharing best practices among the countries that are currently affected? That is, what is the communication between Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, our Mana River Union group? Is there sharing in terms of best practices? For example, what's happening in Liberia, can that be passed on to Sierra Leone? And also my question, we hear a lot of whispers and talking about the weather helping in terms of healing, that as dry season comes along, perhaps that is helping kill the Ebola virus. And I guess this question is for the doctor, if he could just shed some light on that. And also I wanted to thank my brother for yielding. Thank you so much.
Well,
for embracing
thank you.
Democracy.
Absolutely. Shaka, we can address those questions, and maybe we'll come back to the audience as well in a few minutes. Go for it.
Thank you very much, my brother, for embracing democracy. Let me come to you, Dr. Malonga. I think you could answer that question, really.
Yeah. Are we sharing the best practices?
Yes.
What are those best practices? I would like to learn a bit more, because I have contacts in Morovia, and they are not sending me reports. It looks like, as my brother from Sierra Leone was saying, that we have so many people working in, we have no harmony. We don't know who is coordinating all the efforts. As I said, we have Chinese, we have Cubans, we have Americans, we have British, we have French. We have who is the mentor? Who is the person who is orchestrating everything? Unfortunately, you have three countries, but we are in one region. So we would like to have somebody who is going to coordinate the effort for West Africa, because you can do whatever you want in Liberia, but if Guinea still have the problem, you are going to have the problem, because Ebola doesn't require a visa. Okay. So we have to be cognizant of that fact that we are one world. Okay. We have the best practice are swift response and adequate, appropriate response. And why are you looking, why are you trying to invent the wheel? I told you this is the 26th time that Ebola is hitting us. So you don't have to create new. Just go and ask those people, the Ugandans, the Sudanese, the Congolese, the Gabonese, how did you deal with this outbreak? We were not prepared either in 1976 to get Ebola. Ebola strikes like that with no warning. So we know what we have to do. Just do what has worked outside. You don't need ambulances to take patients from Kenema to Freetown. Nobody has done that. What we have done in all these areas is to treat people locally at the community level. So when I heard from my contacts in Liberia that in some villages, when somebody dies, you have to call Monrovia and wait for a team, a special team, to come and bury the person. And sometimes they wait 3 days. Come on. Come on. Can't we organize safe burials at the local level? So that's the problem also we are facing, especially in Sierra Leone. It's not the president who needs to go in every village. You have leaders, you have local leaders. Give them responsibility to take care of the problems at the local level. You don't speak, I know that in Sierra Leone and Liberia you speak English, but you have also other languages that people understand better. So you have to speak not only the language, but you have to speak, you have to in culture, you have to put your message in the local culture.
Ambassador Stevens, earlier you said that you had some problems answering some of these questions because you are a diplomat. I hope that you are receiving the challenge from your brother that, in fact, despite that, you do not need to be economic with the truth, so long as there is evidence that people are suffering. You're most welcome. You're tuned into a special edition of Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of Ebola town hall discussion in a moment. We'll be right back with you, so don't go away.
The pain and suffering from losing a loved one to the Ebola disease is heartbreaking. I'm Dr. Conde Greaves. After their death, you must remain cautious. Your loved one's body is still very contagious. The virus is still highly present in bodily fluids. More than 4,500 people have died from the Ebola virus that has swept through the region. To protect yourself and the people around you, you must not practice the usual practices for burial or cremation. Do not wash, touch, or handle the body after death. Leave this to trained professionals who wear special protective clothing. Remove dirty bed sheets and towels with gloves and burn them. The death of a family member or friend is always a difficult time. Take the precautions to protect yourself. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
Welcome back. Today we have a special edition of Straight Talk Africa as the Voice of America brings you the Knowledge is Life Town Hall on Ebola. Our distinguished guests are Bokari K. Stevens, the Sierra Leonean Ambassador to the United States, Dr. Malonga Miyatudila, a senior public health specialist and co-discoverer of the Ebola virus, Dr. Rick Sekula, a medical missionary for serving in mission, or SIM. He is the third U.S. Ebola patient and the first to be treated at the Nebraska Medical Center. And last but not least, Ashoka Mukpo, the fifth American to be diagnosed with the Ebola virus and freelance photojournalist who contracted the virus while working in Liberia. Well, I have to say, unfortunately, there's no democracy on the panel because there is no lady here. But I have to frankly say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the four of you. You're most welcome. Now, I guess I have to go to my colleague and social reporter. That is Mariama.
Well, Shaka, just a reminder to our viewers and listeners to post your Ebola questions on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. And, of course, you can send us tweets now at VOA Shaka, or just send any tweets. And don't forget the hashtags VOA Ebola. And I think we're getting some of the tweets coming in already with questions. And I'm going to read one from Al-Hassan Kene. Asking, is Ebola a man-made disease as it's being claimed by people? If yes, who and where? Shaka.
Interesting, very interesting. You still have these meats. What about you, Rick? Would you like to take that? Man-made?
Can I see the question again?
Oh, just the man-made question asked, is Ebola actually a man-made disease? If yes or no, who, why?
Right, no, yeah. Ebola is a virus. And nobody invented it in any lab. It's probably been around longer, but we first discovered it in 1976. And the reason why it can pop up here and there is because it can stick around in certain animal populations, like bats and other primates like monkeys. So it can be in the environment, even though it's not causing an outbreak in humans. So it can be out there in the environment, and then it can pop up in another human population.
Now, Rick, there are some people who may want to know, what is the difference between a virus and a bacteria? Bacteria seem to be very much taken care of, really. They can be treated effectively and what have you. But viruses seem to be very stubborn. What's the difference between the two?
Bacteria are alive all by themselves. They can live in a bowl of soup, whereas viruses have to have a host. So the virus, when it's just sitting there, it's not really alive. It can't reproduce. It can't do anything. Mm-hmm. Only when it gets inside a host, like a person or a monkey or a bat, in this case, the virus can get can start to reproduce, and it takes over. I think the reason why it's harder to deal with is it takes over our body's machinery to reproduce itself. So it's harder to treat because it doesn't have its own enzymes and things to attack. It takes over our machinery to do its work. So that makes it harder to treat.
Very interesting. Now, Ashok, we gather you have a sort of diary that you were taking. Would it be possible for you to walk us back into that particular diary context, that experience?
I'm sorry, a diary?
A diary, your diary, you know, as you were in Liberia, sure. For example.
Well, it was interesting. On some level, Monrovia was going about its business. So you could go around town, and you wouldn't necessarily see the impact that the disease was having until you went to a place where they were treating Ebola patients. But if you would go to those places and see what people were going through, it was just devastating. You know, entire families are being destroyed. And I actually think that question that was asked on Twitter is interesting because it reflects something that I saw a lot, which was a state of mistrust. So you really had people wondering, where did this disease come from? We've never seen it before, you know. And a lot of people initially didn't even believe that it was real. And I think what's interesting to ask a question about that is, where does that mistrust come from? So if people are looking at Ebola, even though they've been told so many times that this is not a man-made disease, a lot of people continue to wonder that. And I think that reflects a feeling, is the outside world, do they really have my best interest in mind? I think that dynamic that exists in these countries is going to be very important to look at in the, yeah.
Walk us to that day when you were supposed to be going to this CDC official who was staying, according to you, in a very comfortable hotel, and suddenly something happens to you. Mm-hmm. You remember?
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to forget it. it's a day that definitely will stand out in my mind for my entire life. You know, when all of us were working in that outbreak, whether it was at a medical professional or a journalist, we were very attuned to if anything kind of came up in our body, you know, you feel a little bit achy, a little bit of a sore throat, you go and you take your temperature. So that day, I had been feeling fine. I'd been working out in the field. We had a long car ride, talked to some orphans, and then I got into this car to go do this interview, and it was kind of a joyous moment because I just really, you know, NBC was saying, yeah, we like you, you know, we're going to keep giving you more work. And then I sat down in this car, and I just felt something off. You know, I felt like my back was hurting and my body had an ache, and I thought, you know, I should go check that out.
You measure the temperatures were skyrocketing and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, of course, as someone said earlier, that Ebola does not require a visa. In fact, you can go beyond and say it is perhaps an equal opportunity employer. It has neither boundaries nor does it have borders, really. Mariama, what about you? I understand there is something cooking in your neighborhood.
Yes, I'm actually going to piggyback just on what Dr. Ashoka talked about with the state of mind that some people are. And one of the Facebook comments actually talks about this one from Ezra Tumsiye from Kampala says, is it true that Ebola is a biological weapon made by superpowers and being tested in Africa? So maybe we can address that question as I walk to get some more audience questions. And I think I'm going to go right. My brother, I'm going to come to you, I promise. But this time, since I'm on this side, I think I'm just going to stay on this side and give this gentleman an opportunity to introduce yourself, your affiliation, and question or comment.
My name is Frank Michael Tweheyo. I'm from Uganda. I work with Empower International Ministries as Africa's program director. And I'm also a graduate student here in the United States. I want to congratulate the two gentlemen who survived Ebola. And want to thank God with you. Your Excellency, the Ambassador, I had a question written for you, but you've answered it partly, but I want to narrow it a bit. I wanted to ask you about the international response and how if you are satisfied with it, but I want to narrow it to Africa. Are you satisfied with the African Union and the African fraternity response so far? I know some Ugandan doctors have died in the process and so on and so forth, but overall, are you satisfied with the Africa's response, the Africa's fraternity response towards Ebola in West Africa? Thank you very much.
Shaka, a very good question. We hear a lot about the international reactions and what the international community is doing. He wants to know what Africans are doing, the neighboring countries and the whole continent.
Mariama, what Frank didn't tell you, by the way, is that he happens to come from a very small southwestern Ugandan town of Kabale, the birthplace of yours truly.
When I met him, I asked him, he said he's from Uganda. I just almost gave him a hug since now I know Shaka, every Ugandan person is almost like a brother or sister.
And he's my alma mater from Kigezi College, Butobere Senior. So
there you go.
There you are. Your reaction, Mr.
Thank
Ambassador.
Thank you very much. The response that we receive from the international community, it's to some extent phenomenal. I mean, from all over, from Cuba, United Kingdom, and only recently the Dutch ship is back now in Sierra Leone. And also, there are some of them that do not make much news. You have some countries who will contribute and it will be in all the headlines. We have others who will contribute very quietly, like Gambia. The Gambia president, the Gambia government, when they gave us $1 million. The other small countries, and Ghana is playing a very important role. Nigeria has sent in even clinicians and doctors, volunteers, to help us. And the African Union, they were one of the first people to, even the staff at the African Union put together some amount of money for the cause. And the African Union is also one of those that is recruiting volunteers on a global scale to go and help. And also, again, maybe it's good to mention that here locally, we are also trying to recruit our Sierra Leonean medical people. We have more doctors here in the United States than the total number of doctors that we have in Sierra Leone. And if you come to nurses, other clinicians, that figure doubles or trebles. So we are trying. We have a task force. We are meeting with them. And some of them have started going to Sierra Leone to go and help. But, of course, when you hear that 7 doctors have died, it creates a chill in the spine of some of these people to go.
We might add, by the way, that about 2 weeks ago, the AU hosted a meeting of individual African rich people,
yes,
who collected nearly $28 million, which is to be disbursed through the African Development Bank. Mm. Yes. Well, we'll come to Ricky. I think we should answer this question, really. Is Ebola a biological...
I have not, in all the reading and studying I've done so far, I have not seen any evidence of that. The scientists tell us it's been around a long time and it's out there in nature. I think it came from the same place that other viruses come from. That's my understanding. Again, I think it speaks, the question speaks to what my fellow survivor mentioned, that there's suspicion and mistrust, and there are reasons for that. And I think trying to collaborate and work together to solve the problems that face us, whether in West Africa or anywhere, as the more we collaborate together and the more we communicate and understand one another, the better off we are. The less that mistrust will be there. I think, as somebody who has lived in Liberia for 15 years, you see this come up periodically, but I think it always helps if I think one problem with the Ebola crisis is that it brings in new people who've never been, and they're trying to solve a problem in a moment. And it's very difficult because of the cultural and language, and that understanding isn't there yet. But when you live somewhere and you gain a cultural understanding and some language understanding, then it's a little easier. So we've seen that at our facility. It's a little easier to cross that boundary because we've been working there for years and years. But this kind of crisis, you have to bring in more resources quickly, and then you can sometimes end up with misunderstanding.
What attracted you, inspired you, by the way, to go to Liberia, really? You went there so early. Was it in some way, shape, or form, perhaps trying to pretty much do or redo what was last done by a great British missionary doctor by the name David Livingstone?
No, I don't think I could try to fill those shoes. simply, kind of echoing what Ashoka said, simply a desire to make a difference. For people who didn't have health care, to try to just to try to provide access to that kind of care. I had a wonderful family doctor when I was growing up, and I actually had this ambition from when I was quite young to do that because I thought there are people in the world who have no access to a doctor, and I could make a difference there. So, but it's a small contribution, but I'm thankful for the opportunity to do it.
David Livingstone, the 19th century, of course, British hero. If the recent referendum in Scotland has succeeded, of course, he might have a claim of being Scottish, correct? After all, he came from there. Do you agree with what he talked about Ebola not being a biological weapon or not, with your colleague?
Again, I think we have been distracted from the problem. And everywhere I go, I say, if you want to help Ebola, just spread these rumors, because they are helping Ebola. So hysteria, rumors are good allies to Ebola. So choose your side. So let's focus on the problem that we have. We have an enemy that we have to combat. And unfortunately, Ebola is going to be with us forever. Why? Because actually we, the human beings, we are encroaching in their habitat. So how do we meet the Ebola virus that has been living there for years? It's because we, the human being, are going into the habitat of the bats. We are entering the new niches. So this is where we are meeting new friends or enemies. So that's the problem.
Yeah, but someone might tell you, wait a minute, human beings and birds and animals have always coexisted, really.
Yeah, we have coexisted, but everybody has his own. But now you can go to Africa, you see people going into the forest, cutting trees. Yes, then you meet this virus that has been living there. And the virus will jump from the bats or its natural reservoir to us. Why? Because, for instance, we are eating bats, or we are eating animals that are being infected by bats. So this is how we become neighbors. So that's the problem. Now we have to develop ways to adapt to the new situation. Yes, we may be, in a few months, we hope so, able to control the outbreak. So we are going to put an end to the epidemic, but we are going to have an endemic of Ebola. Ebola is going to stay with us.
Unfortunately.
So we have to prepare ourselves to that world.
Time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, once again, I'd like to thank our four distinguished guests for participating in our special edition of Straight Talk Africa Ebola Town Hall. Thanks to you, our audience, the lifeline of today's town hall, for joining us here at the Voice of America studios, and those who stayed with us for our extended 30-minute webcast. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to our special edition of Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember, keep the African hopes alive.